Today's featured guest, Rob Kirby from Kirby Analytics.
Welcome back, Rob Kirby.
Pleasure to be with you, Chris.
I read an article last week from Bloomberg News that indicated that if China were to revalue its yuan, the renminbi, in terms of gold, you'd be looking at a price 50 times higher than today, roughly $64,000. That's the number they threw out there. You know, Bloomberg News is somewhat mainstream. You don't expect to hear mainstream folks talking about $64,000 gold. Are they pulling this out of the sky? Is there something more going on here?
Chris, what we're witnessing and experiencing has been on the docket for a very, very long time. And to explain what I mean when I say things that have been on the docket for a long time, I would like to revisit an article that I wrote in February of 2005, and this is just an excerpt from it, where I said, it seems to me the mindset of the Fed and Treasury might best be summed up by Robert Rubin as he reveals the motivation or drivers of crisis management in the interaction between himself, then Treasury Undersecretary Lawrence Summers, the Exchange Stabilization Fund, and the IMF, and presumably, we can assume, Alan Greenspan at the Fed. This was back during the times of the Clinton administration that he was referencing. And he was referencing this in his book on pages 290 and 291. The book's title is In an Uncertain World. He was referencing the Brazilian financial crisis of the late 1990s. Rubin spoke about how very bad decisions, very expensive bad decisions, can buy time. Sometimes, he asserted, these bad decisions have a great deal of merit because they can probably defer the impact of the collapse for 6 or 8 months, and that will more than justify the effort. You see, Chris, this is what characterizes the whole backdrop of what crisis management is all about with the managers of our current financial system is. And this plays right into what China is doing and why China might take the actions that you just spoke of. Because, you see, these guys have been kicking the can down the road, okay? By kicking the can down the road, they've been making very bad, expensive decisions. And now they're running out of road to kick the can on. That's why, Chris, we are being positioned and we're being prepared to go to war. It's not because these geopolitical tensions have their roots in economic failure, in fiat money failure. This is where it's all rooted, this is where it's all based, and this is why the world's being put on a war footing. When the money fails, we go to war. And likely, or simultaneously as we go to war, you might just see a flood of dollars come back to the United States, because the real failure is with fiat money. And you see, another one of the colossal, horrible, bad mistake is QE to infinity. And you see, you can't get away from it, and you can try to reason it away that the dollar's strong. We know China has been buying gold bullion, physical gold bullion, for the past 10 years anyway, and they've been buying it at a frenetic pace. And I mean, current numbers quite document that China's been buying as much in recent years as much as 2,000 or 2,500 metric tons a year. And I mean, just start doing the math, Chris. It doesn't, they've been extremely fond of gold for at least the past 10 years. And if you're buying at a clip of anywhere from 1,500 to 2,500 metric tons a year, getting to a 20,000 metric ton gross holding number is really not a stretch of the imagination at all. And the reality is, Chris, China might not ever tell us exactly how much gold they have because they might not view it to be in their best interest to do so.
No, and this is, I think, crucial to the case you're making, because if this is true, and, you know, we're seeing signs of it, many of my guests regularly travel to Hong Kong, they travel to Shanghai, and they're telling stories of lines wrapped around buildings just for a chance to buy giant bars, gold bars, so they can take it back to the mainland where there are still restrictions in some of the provincial regions. Another, I think, key point that you make is that you've gone on record, I believe it was on Greg Hunter's show, noting that anyone who wishes to buy size of the yellow metal in Asia have to regularly pay $500, even $600 over spot just to procure said metal. Tell us more about this.
This does occur. This is not something, Chris, that's cast in stone, but this does occur on a frequent basis. Premiums are paid for metal, and the amount of premium that gets paid from time to time depends on who the acquirer is and who the seller is, and how strategic how strategic the particular buyer views the particular tranche of metal that they are getting exposure to. You see, the real truth of it is, Chris, the gold market, the physical gold market, is so bifurcated, it's unbelievable, because raw gold actually comes out of different jurisdictions in Africa at a discount to LBMA pricing. And then we have a retail market where things generally trade at or close to spot. And then we also have off-market transactions which can occur for investment-grade bars and coins at stiff premiums to what the spot price is. The real insincere part of precious metals pricing is really the COMEX price. It's the price that we're shoveled every day as being the true indicator of the price of precious metal. The reality is, the real market for precious metal, if physical precious metal specifically, is extremely bifurcated. But nobody in the mainstream wants to report that or talk about that reality. Instead, they want to talk about, like, over the last number of years, central banks who are running out of road to kick the can down that I just referenced a few minutes ago. They would like to have us believe that the world hasn't liked precious metal for the past 4 or 5 years, and natural market forces has walloped the price down while the stock market has been inflated higher, the dollar's been manipulated higher. And, you know, and they like to refer to people that talk about reality. They like to refer to us as conspiracy theorists. And, you know, and we're the same people that are saying the whole financial system is jacked and rigged. And, you know, lo and behold, we've got the United States Justice Department bringing huge fines against a collection of miscreant bankers who have rigged LIBOR, foreign currencies. And, you know, isn't it funny that they can actually make the statement that foreign currencies have been rigged and leave gold out? You see, because if you go to the Treasury of the Royal Bank of Canada, which is the biggest bank in my country, they actually trade gold off the foreign currency desk. So if foreign currencies are rigged, then I would suggest to you that gold is a foreign currency, or it is a currency. And if currencies are rigged, gold is rigged along with the rest of them. Always be a currency, Chris. Despite what central bankers are currently doing and currently suggesting they might do in the very near future. You see, because the signs of their desperation have become so ridiculously plain for everybody to see. They're even talking about such hideous thoughts as outlawing and banishing cash. And the reason they're doing this, Chris, is because they're losing control of their own house. Their feelings are, if they have everybody off cash, the physical cash that you can hold, physical cash gives people the ability to buy things of their choosing. And when you eliminate cash and everything becomes digital, that the government can surveil 24/7, then the government can do such things as outlawing the purchase of precious metal. If the bankers ever try to make a move to banish cash, you are going to likely see, right on its coattails, action to try and banish the purchase of physical precious metal. But you see, all that will do for the bankers is bring the end of the road, which is fast approaching, to its end even quicker, because we will see outright rebellion before that's ever allowed to be instituted.
But don't you expect something like just taxing capital gains on gold and silver long before the outlawing of buying and selling of the metal?
It's very interesting when you speak of that, because, you know, I'll just share with you a little snippet from well-read Australian news site. And this is dated today, May 28th. And this little snippet here, referencing a tweet made by a chap by the name of John Schindler, a high-profile military analyst and former U.S. Naval War College lecturer. So this guy's pretty plugged in. And he apparently tweeted, said a senior NATO, non-U.S. GOFO to me today, will probably be at war this summer. If we're lucky, it won't be nuclear. Let that sink in. This is what people in the know, this is what people who are very, very close to the military industrial complex are now speaking openly.
Bearing in mind this is not a politically oriented program at all, can you tie in the Jade Helm exercises that have so many people in the blogosphere jumping out of their shoes over? Can you tie that in with this economic carnage that you see down the road?
Well, absolutely. You see, because this dovetails so neatly, Chris, with what we were just chatting about just minutes ago, talking about being at the end of the road, and being and central bankers and the elites in our financial universe taking more draconian and drastic measures to try and preserve their grip on power. They are going to be instituting things that will cause rebellion. We've already started to see the seeds of rebellion in different jurisdictions in the United States already. We've seen the uprisings in Ferguson, Missouri. We've seen uprisings in Baltimore. And, of course, our mainstream media would like to tell us all of these things, of course, can be nothing other than race baiting. They race bait us. They want us to believe that all of this is race. And they want us to, they're playing the racial card very, very aggressively. And the reality is, Chris, it's not really rooted in race at all. What it's rooted in is the financial system is imploding. The financial system is threadbare. The financial system is on its last legs as we know it. And the racial cards are being played more or finessed more aggressively as the financial edifice moves closer to the edge.
Certainly is polarized. They know, just as our founding fathers pointed out, any society, if you want to tear it down, I mean, if you're divided, you just can't stand. If we stand together, we can, you know, make this work.
When you mentioned Jade Helm, to address it explicitly, the world is on a war footing. Just as the people who control the financial universe, they're going to put America on a war footing, they're going to put everybody who they can on a war footing. When the system goes over the edge, we will not be told it's because it had anything to do with QE to infinity, printing too much money, trying to solve a problem of indebtedness with more debt. You see, we'll be told none of that. We'll be told that the war was because of racial problems. We'll be told that it was because the Russians are evil. We'll be told that it's... These are all false flags, Chris. These things are not what is at the root of the world's problems. What's at the root of the world's problems is dishonest commerce. You know, unsound weights, a system of unsound weights and measures, you see? Because when you print money out of thin air, start buying your own bonds, you see, everybody gets remunerated, unfortunately, in fiat dollars, Chris. And when you print fiat dollars till the cows come home, you debase the currency. You debase the value of the next note that you create out of nothing. And what that serves to do, Chris, is it trivializes effort. It trivializes...
Yeah, creativity and entrepreneurship.
Everything. It trivializes everything. And in a world where everything's become trivial, you know, war doesn't look like such a bad deal.
A chapter, isn't it, torn right out of Orwell's 1984. That's what you've outlined here. It sounds to me as though there's just no way for a happy ending.
Well, unfortunately, no. You see, Chris, when you're speeding down a dead-end road, and you can see the end of the road, when the end of the road is in sight, you either apply the brakes or you have a very, very bad ending.
And unfortunately, everybody's on their iPhone, and they're not paying attention to the dead-end sign. Is there anything we've missed that you'd like to share with the listening audience?
Having all of your investable wealth in paper assets is not a good idea. And having some of it off the grid or invested in things that are nobody else's, nobody else's liabilities, own some precious metal. It's a great thing, and I just can increasingly view it as financial insurance. It's just as important to have financial insurance as it is to have fire insurance on your house, and the notion that it didn't burn down today doesn't mean that you cancel your policy tomorrow or for next year. And in the words of John Embry, which I think were some of the most brilliant words that I've heard in the last 6 or 9 months or a year, John recently said, with precious metal, you can always afford to be 2 years early, but you can't afford to be 10 minutes late.
And isn't that prescient, because most of my guests are expecting financial conditions to reach breakneck speed. This last takedown, if you will, could be lightning-like and catch billions of people, you know, off guard. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. And I'll just say one thing, because we opened this interview talking about the possibility of a tsunami of dollars coming back to America. You know, I've done a little bit of research in the past years on the onsets of hyperinflations, and there's lots of documented cases that you can go read about. If you have the one thing that's common in all hyperinflations is they're always said to be that they come on out of the blue, out of a clear blue. It's like a lightning bolt in a clear blue sky. They tend to come on extremely quickly, and a lot of times they're triggered by something that appears to most people as an absolutely trivial event.
And folks might be saying, yeah, sure, that was true during the Civil War or the Weimar Republic. No, it's actually happening right now in Venezuela, 64% inflation. It happened several months ago in Moscow, where we saw gold revalue. Then they give you these rationalizations. They give you the explanation, oh, well, it's because crude oil plunged and it crushed the ruble. The point is, anyone who was holding rubles suddenly had half as much purchasing power as before.
Exactly. And it, you know what, Chris, the only thing, it may be to impress upon people to think it can't happen here. The degree of chicanery, the degree of fraud, the extent to which our capital markets have become a cesspool is almost unthinkable. And it's unparalleled in human history. Somewhere down the road, the pendulum will swing the other way, and it isn't going to be very fun.
Many will point to the bond market and say, well, you know, the bond market is absorbing like a sponge all of that inflation. And I just can't help but wonder, yes,
well,
but then what?
The bond market is a crime scene. The bond market is a crime scene. The bond market has been rigged worse than anything on the planet. The bond market is a shilling mess. The bond market is held together with a concoction of derivatives that creates artificial demand for bonds, and has done so now over the last 10 or 15 years in a very, very, very aggressive, call it a high frequency, it's a high frequency sham is what the bond market really is. And I mean, we could spend 2 hours discussing it. And you know what? It's beyond the scope of the time we have here. But the bond market is so juiced, it's ridiculous. And there's no way for that to unravel in a pleasant way also.
Now, as this great reset starts to come to pass, I think it's safe to assume that we're going to see this happen probably much more suddenly, as we've alluded to earlier. Is this going to catch the overwhelming majority of people off guard? And if so, can you outline some measures that everyone, all of our listeners today, can take to buffer themselves and their families from what you see ahead?
Well, you know what? At risk of sounding like a prepper, to have some storable food, I think is an intelligent thing to do, to try and protect what financial assets you have, to own some physical precious metal. I think I keep saying it, but you can't say it enough because I think it's extremely important to do it. And you might also want to start to think in terms of getting to know your neighbors and starting to associate with like-minded people who view the world from the same point of view. Because when things start to really unravel, Chris, it's going to be difficult for a lot of people to keep things straight on their own.
Oh, no, look at the folks you see interviewed, walking up and down Main Street. Try to find out, how much disposable income do you have? Do you have anything in savings? How long could you last, if your paycheck was cut off next month or next week?
Chris, most people that I talk to don't even know their neighbors. If you don't know your neighbors and if you have no sense of community, the whole notion that if civil unrest is to break out, if you're into an every man for himself scenario, good luck. If you can band together with like-minded individuals, if you want to think about it in really rude, crude terms, you can at least have a sleep break while somebody has your back. Sounds extreme. But you know what, Chris? We are moving into very extreme danger territories from a financial standpoint, so much so that, people are starting to talk openly about the prospects of war maybe this summer. People that are highly placed saying this. These aren't people that you typically brand as conspiracy theorists. These are people that are in the know right now. They know what's going on. They know that they know the preparations are all being made to do it.
But what will be the false flag?
I don't know. I mean, there's more false flags potentially on the horizon right now, Chris, than there are flags of the United Nations.
Talk to most people today, and you dare mention that it was really a cruise missile that hit the Pentagon at 9/11. And by the way, why did they find so much C4 dust, enough to fill about 14 garbage trucks at the World Trade Center?
Oh, I know, Chris. Look, they couldn't find a piece of a human body any bigger, supposedly, in the rubble of the World Trade Center.
Molten steel for months,
but yet,
Rob.
But yet, a passport, was found on the ground, unblemished.
Why don't you tell folks more about Kirby Analytics for those that would like to find your website and find out more about the services that you provide, please.
You can find me on the web at kirbyanalytics.com. I poke my head up every now and then, and I try to have something to say that maybe somebody finds of value. That's what I do.
Well, we're glad you do it, because if you stay in the bunker too long, you're liable to get cabin fever, and we all can use a dose of this reality. Rob Kirby, we appreciate your thoughts. We're going to look forward to having you back.
Looking forward to it, Chris.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.